So I'm standing amidst this biting November air, and I take a look at what surrounds me. Is it a New York City street? Is it a traffic jam in LA? No, it's the final resting place for more than 1,650 African-American citizens of Durham, North Carolina. And these are the sounds that pass by them as they rest. Walking through the cemetery, I see fences and headstones laying shattered beneath a fallen tree. I see grass overgrown, sections shrouded in weeds. When I walk deeper into the cemetery, of the names that are written, many are illegible, sanded down by neglect and time. Even though over 1,600 individuals are buried in the cemetery, only 200 monuments are visible. Despite the noise that surrounds these folks, many of them remain silent in the channels of history. So today, we will grapple with the impact of these historical silences on Black women. We will analyze the extent of the harm that weaponized silence causes and learn how to move forward and mend these wounds. In pursuit of this end, I will speak to three Black female researchers of various different spaces and paths. Today, they will guide us in finding the most ethical way to care for these seemingly impossible legacies. As we launch into today's exploration, there are a few terms that we should keep in mind. The first is Black female anonymity. To put it in its most simple terms, Black female anonymity describes the absence of Black women from the historical record. This concept is not confined to the world of academia. This occurs when a photograph is left out of an archive, when a grave lies unmarked, when the first Black person that appears in a textbook is nameless and stands on an auction block. The next term that you'll hear pop up is weaponized anonymity. This translates to using the silencing of Black women as a weapon of suppression. All right. Now that we're on the same page, let's dive in. To start off, I'd like to provide some context to the concepts of Black anonymity and weaponized silence through the work of one notable scholar from Duke University, Professor Jasmine Cobb. I'll hand it over to her for an introduction.
Yeah, so I am a professor of African-American studies, art history, and visual studies here at Duke. I write on representations of Black freedom with a focus on Black women.
Now, as you take a listen, please pardon the background noise. So we start off our conversation talking about one big question that you might have about this project. Why study Black women?
I am most fascinated by what's happening with Black women, what we do, why we do it, how we've survived, how our connections to one another is so important to our liberation of all kinds. And I do really believe that it is through what we do with and for Black women that all Black people benefit, right? Anna Julia Cooper is when and where I enter, the whole race enters with me. Like, I really think that.
So if we listen to that quote and reconcile with the importance of studying Black women, we can turn our attention to how this idea of weaponized silence has been enacted. How has this forced silence been inflicted on Black women?
In researching that book, I saw a lot of things like caricatures, newspaper images, abolitionist images, and they were pretty much focused on depicting Black women, their style of dress and their social condition. And these images were really unlike the images Black women made of themselves, where largely they did not depict their bodies, but they talked about feelings and love and wishes for one another and fondness for one another. And so in the distinction between those things, I saw Black women as giving us a glimpse of their interiors, right? What's happening internally for them versus all of these other representations focusing on skin color, clothing type, hair texture, really focused on the exterior. I think researching Black women requires creativity because many people have tried to tell our stories. They haven't always asked us for our own stories. So in the archives, you know, with my first book, it meant I could find lots of things non-Black people were saying about Black women. I had to really dig deep to find what Black women had to say about Black women.
From here, we take a look more directly at Professor Cobb's work. She's currently developing a project on Harriet Tubman, a powerful figure in American history whose story has been told time and time again. So looking at Black women like Tubman, we can wonder, how does anonymity apply to them? What historical silences have they been subjected to?
I think as I'm preparing this project on Tubman, I'm a little intimidated because she is larger than life, you know. There's so many things. I don't even think we believe we know them, but like we're willing to make them up. So with Tubman, the example is like people know she carried a gun. Sometimes they show it as this long rifle. Sometimes it's a pistol, you know, and it's like almost about making her like a folk superhero. So my entry into that project is kind of through art. And I think if I do it right, I'll be able to say things about Tubman, but I'll also be able to say things about art and how art treats Black women. Yeah, I think I'll have to make peace with certain limitations. Like some things I just won't get to know, you know, because of the archive. But I'm going to do it anyway.
But I'm going to do it anyway might be my favorite line in our entire conversation. When we're broaching a topic as big as how to respond to weaponized anonymity and how to continue telling the stories of Black women, of course there will be things missing. Of course things will go wrong. But one critical component of this project is that we can't live in absence. We do not only exist to acknowledge what isn't there, but rather celebrate what is left and what could be, to move forward with solutions in mind. That's what Professor Jasmine Cobb does, and this leads us to our next feature, another Black scholar, who helps capture the stories of Black women and responds to silence with uplift. So, let's take a little trip. On November 16th, 2022, I get dropped off at Stagville Cemetery to interview Khadijah McNair.
Just right here is okay. Thank you so much.
She's a scholar, a new mother of two, and, well, I guess I'll let her introduce herself.
My name is Khadijah McNair, and I'm the assistant site manager at Stagville State Historic Site.
So after I arrive, we take a seat behind the visitor center, and this breeze is blowing easily behind us as we get to talking. Here she tells me a part of the story of one of her subjects of research, Caroline Barnes.
So Caroline is... She was enslaved by the Duke family. She was born into slavery. She is born on a farm in Orange County, a single white man named Daniel Turrentine. He's the only white man on this property with 15 enslaved people. I do think it's extremely possible that he sexually abused women there. I do think it's extremely possible that he was Caroline's father.
As I was listening to the story of Caroline's life, I noticed that Khadijah was sharing with me her own wonderings and speculations about what might have been at the same time that she was sharing these verified facts from the archive. They were woven together seamlessly, often feeling like they were dancing with each other. So I started to wonder how speculation operates, and further, what it means to revere an individual's legacy.
Yeah, I think it definitely means like honoring them and like not losing them, and I don't know, I don't want to lie, but I feel like there's, like, some, like, African proverb, like, some saying, like, I am because they were, and I think that kind of sits with me daily in, like, the work that I do. I think it's really important to, like, give thanks to the people that survived. I think slavery is a topic, American slavery is a topic that so many people don't understand. And I think it's also a topic that can be weaponized very easily. I think particularly among Black folks, it's like if you weren't like Harriet Tubman or Nat Turner, then you weren't trying. And I am like really angered by that. I mean, like, Harriet Tubman, amazing. Nat Turner, like, definitely, these are great, amazing people. But I don't think we should, like, hold them higher than anyone else who experienced slavery. Because I can't imagine. I will never know what it felt like to be enslaved. I will never know what it felt like to labor in the mansion of a single white man. I think we have to, like, give them all the praise and the honor that they deserve forever, because that's like I said, that somebody survived all that for us to exist, and that's really important to me.
Somebody survived all that for us to exist. I want to hold on to that. At the same time, let's call back to that broader idea that we were talking about earlier with filling in the gaps. Because when speaking with Khadija, we zoomed out to look at what impact speculation might have in her work.
It plays a big role because we don't know a lot. Like, they didn't, or we haven't found their diaries yet. We haven't found their letters. All I can do is speculate because the records aren't there like they should be. And I've also, like, grappled with, like, using these white men and these white experiences to tell the stories of Mary Sparkman and Caroline Barnes. And it's difficult because I want to center these Black women in their stories. It's their story. Yeah. But I think it's as hard as it is to, I feel like we have to bring in the white man stories and, like, say their names and, like, talk about who they were as people because they were part of Caroline and Mary's experiences, but also because, like, the records are with them, you know? I'm 100% sure I could go and, like, look up Ben Duke and come back and tell you exactly what his personality was like and, like, every single part of his life. It sucks that I can do that for him but not for them, but it's important because that's who shaped their lives. I think it's really difficult to hold both things, but you have to hold both things, you know? So,
You see, this part of our conversation complicated things a bit for me. I had one rule for this assignment before I began. One rule. Only Black women allowed. This is a project about the silence that Black women experience, so why would I need a white man's voice featured here? And then I talked to Khadija, and she raised this idea of having to hold both things. So I did. Next, you will hear from an individual who has worked at Stagville for the last 5 years. An individual that happens to be a white man. And if I can ask you, what gives you as the right as a white man to tell these stories?
I still don't have a good answer to that. Part of it is the burden shouldn't be solely on African Americans to tell this story. Because this is an American story in terms of what happened here. And we all, as Americans, have a responsibility to not just make sure this never happens again, but to make sure what happened here is fully compensated and that the story is told truthfully and not sugarcoated and, or as I like to say, Disneyfied in the 20th century. many of these plantations were shown as romantic places, and they're anything but. And somebody, you know, needs to come and say, there were sexual assaults here, there were rapes here, this actually happened. And that's what this place really is. And I think, you know, to me, that shouldn't just be a burden on African Americans. It should be for everyone. Because I know, as a white heterosexual male, I have a lot of privilege in this world. And a lot of the privilege I have is not because I deserve it. It's because of what happened on places like this. And what still is around us to this day. That's why. So.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd like to note for you guys that the first time we discussed this question about what gives him the right to help tell these stories, his answer was very simple. He said, I don't. And he went on to say that as long as descendants keep trusting him to do this work, he would.
I'm always hopeful that we'll be able to kind of dive deeper. I'm a believer in, like, reclaiming space and, like, speaking names, like, saying names and, like, calling folks back. And I guess my belief is that they are pleased, right? Wherever they are, whatever they're doing right now, they are pleased with me telling this story, you know? And, like, if that, hopefully, prayerfully, Carolina's pleased, but I also pray that Gracie's pleased. I also pray that, you know, the people, other people who were with Caroline and knew Caroline are pleased.
The point Khadijah raises is an important one and an often forgotten one. Oftentimes when immersing ourselves in language and rhetoric, we can lose the feeling. And in this work, the feeling that comes with telling the stories of the ancestors can often be the most truthful part of it all.
Now you're starting to see why this place is so cool.
Yeah.
Just historically speaking, it's amazing. But you really do, I don't know, you know, and I don't believe in spiritualism or I'm a scientist first and foremost, but there is something here. There is a feeling you get here that is unlike any other place. It really is. And it's almost, I don't want to say it's a pressure, but you feel like I'm doing what I do for the people that were enslaved here and they're watching me. And I need to do a really good job. You know, I feel that.
Holding these feelings close to us, I want us to head back to where we were first set, Gear Cemetery, where I first met our final featured researcher, Chris Mayfield. Now, she has a unique perspective on the site on which we stood, as she is a Gear descendant. With this perspective, I engaged with her on the same questions that we've already been talking about, but she looked at them on the personal level, through the lens of her own genealogy and her own community within Durham, North Carolina. And that's why it's really important to remember that these aren't abstract concepts. These are real people. These are our mothers, our aunts, sisters, grandmothers. These are our people. So keeping that in mind, let's head back to Ms. Mayfield.
Why do you choose to research Black women?
Well, they're just fascinating. And I'm always annoyed because, of course, I'm a Black woman. So that's the first thing. And living in Durham growing up, you hear about the same five people all the time. Black Wall Street. Spalding's kin. It's like, seriously, they had wives. They had, and my Aunt Bessie was an actual, like, she worked for North Carolina Mutual. But she did all this other stuff. Like, apparently she was a bad at, you know. I'm like, Aunt Bessie, you out in these streets doing all kinds of stuff. Like, she got into it with her boss for wearing a red dress out on the street. I was like, interesting. You know, playing cards, running up bills and not paying them. She was married to my Uncle Orrin. He got busted for moonshine. And I was like, okay. And she found it. I don't know if you've ever seen W.D. Hill in Durham. Like, it's a recreation center now. But previously, there used to be a tennis club there called the Algonquin Club, which she founded. But it was extremely unusual because there were no black tennis courts anywhere around. And when I say anywhere, Arthur Ashe came from Richmond to play at that tennis court. That's how rare they were. So she just was awesome to me. I was like, you're just doing all the things. And then you keep, you know, as I kept learning more and more, I noticed all these women had gone to college, like straight out of slavery, college educated, you know, Fisk and, you know, different schools, which again, you don't hear that. No one hears that. You don't tell those stories.
Despite the silences that have occurred in the past, you can see that Miss Mayfield is making the stories of the black women in her family known. And honestly, after all these conversations, that seems like the choice that each of these speakers have made. Understanding that not everything can be saved and not everything will be remembered, but doing our best to shine light on the stories that have been hidden in the shadows. Working together, remembering that black women or even black people are not the only ones who should be doing the work, because these are American stories. You know, that reminds me, I started off a while back talking about the harm imposed upon Gere Cemetery, the disrepair that it has fallen into. And yes, that may be true, but I may have forgotten to mention to you the friends of Gere, the people who have come together to clear away the weeds, clean the headstones, and map the locations of the burials, and hold space for those who may have once been silenced. They're doing the work. We all have to. And it pays off. I mean, if you close your eyes and listen closely, you can hear their stories, and you can feel them here with us today.